Unexpected trouble? CashNet USA can take the stress out of borrowing emergency funds. Our fast, secure application process makes it easy to apply online 24/7. Plus, CashNet USA offers same-day funding if approved before 10:30 a.m. Central Time, Monday through Friday. Additional terms may apply. Visit CashNetUSA.com or tap the banner to apply today.
Hey, everybody. It is Bob, and welcome to Bob Saget's here for you. And I try to change the inflection every time because I got to say the same thing because that's the title of the damn thing. And it is the first podcast ever done by a comedian. I have a guest that is one of my dearest friends on this earth coming up right now. He is, I don't know what to say. He's so super talented. He's one of the best guitarists alive. I'm trying to do this before he is on the line because he won't like that. He will and he won't. And he's also such a good person and such a loving person and beyond the amazing talent. But he's been there for me when I needed a good friend. And we'll talk about all that crap. But it's not crap, but I don't know. Crab is kind of, well, never mind. My draws flies. This does not. There's no flies around our relationship. And you, many of you love him. If you know, and he's done things that not many people could do. But enough about his love life. I won't do that. I'll wait till I got him on the line. Ladies and gentlemen, kids of all ages, maybe not all ages. I'd say this is an over 15 show, over 13, because his voice is so beautiful and he writes such great music. And he's funny as hell. Ladies and gentlemen, I am calling my buddy John Mayer.
Hello.
Hello. So, what about all this spam we're getting?
Is this one of those interviews that just starts from the beginning?
No, it's whatever you want. It's I just thought I was just looking at how much spam I had before I called you.
I can't stop unsubscribing from things.
Like, no,
I keep getting things,
and then you block them, and then that doesn't stop it. But they're in your junk pile at least if you're on a Mac. But
every good means of communication ends up with a junk version of that thing.
That's you know? Some of my relationships were like that. I would try to trade up, and I'd get the you know, it was my fault because I was I wasn't Bob 4.0. I was Bob 2.1. And
imagine getting broken up with and sending a text that says, "We're sorry to see you go." just make it really.
I've tried to unsubscribe from a few.
Yeah, exactly.
There's something that you did the other night, which was amazing. On Current Mood on your show that's on Instagram, and everybody asks you all the same questions, but I'm asking you because I actually want to know. I'm trying to track back. When did you start that? Was like 2 years ago?
Yeah, it must have been 2.5 years ago. But that still wasn't the first time I'd ever done it. I believe, who had the live thing before Instagram? Snapchat Live?
Napster?
It was something before Instagram Live. It was Snapchat, I think.
Yeah, well, it was Snapchat was doing, I actually posted something on there today, and I think I've lost most of the people because they don't.
You have to keep watering that garden, but whatever preceded Instagram Live.
I'm trying to remember. What was it, Facebook Live? No, because they came after Instagram Live.
Maybe it really was Instagram Live, and Instagram Live's been around longer than I thought. But the point is, I just have always wanted to have a talk show. Since I was a kid, I wanted to have a talk show. I love the format.
You're great at it.
I love that.
When Craig Ferguson left and they were having a bunch of different hosts before James Corden came in, and I was a guest on one of them, and it couldn't have been more comfortable. You couldn't have been more prepared. And that's the other thing.
Yeah.
You're an over preparer, but that's the key. And people think I don't prepare. in this case, I don't. But I know you so
you
well.
You don't have to.
Well, I actually I did prepare.
But, oh, did you?
Yeah, because I there's things I don't want to go. Why didn't I mention that? Because that's like a nice thing. But when you over prepare and then you just let it go, then you can do the jazz in between, and that's where people.
That's right.
That's where they think you're making it up, and that's why you got such a bright mind. And I just was attracted to that right away when I met you.
Yeah, no, you and I hit it off really fast. The thing about doing quote unquote television, which we'll just, for the sake of the binary, we'll call Instagram Live television because it's not music.
Well, it is TV now. Right now it is
TV.
Part of it.
It feels like TV. You're in front of a camera, you're broadcasting, you're signing on, you're signing off. It's very hard for me to have a good show. And I've discovered there's a difference between having a good show and giving a good show. You probably give a good show more often than not, but it's very rare to both have a good show internally and give a good show externally. And I usually sign off going, I don't know. And then other people have to tell me it worked. And then I'm pretty good about replacing my opinion with what I believe is fact from them.
Right.
But I can never get a really good read because don't you feel like when you're doing a live broadcast, you're so busy with what could be said, should be said, how to say it, when to bail, when to keep going. And then if you involve another person in the conversation, now you have to look out for that dynamic, making sure that stays on track, making sure, oh, did this thought, I mean, have you ever finished a thing and wondered, did I say it or think it?
I've done so many appearances on, and between all the years with Johnny and, I mean, literally everybody, Arsenio and David and all the shows and all the current ones. The ones where I think I was amazing because I covered all the jokes and I hit all the beats that I wanted to and I was free form and I thought I had some good stuff with Conan going back and forth. Sometimes those are the ones that people go, you were okay. I've seen you better. And those are respect. It's when you don't know that you did well because you're literally not listening to it. You're not.
Yeah.
There is no note in your head. You're just in the moment. So
that's
if you're
right.
so in the moment, right. when it's over, it's the normal letdown of like a kid running around all night, having a great time, and then having to go to bed. So,
but how about this? Well, sorry, what?
No, I was actually just giving some kind of guttural grunt.
No. By the way, timing of cell phones has gotten just worse than it was 10 years ago. But have you ever found this, that even if you say something incredibly funny, but in your mind, in a split second, you had to think through 8 things before you picked a 9th that worked.
Right.
Your brain reports to you later on that you said 9 things.
You've been so busy that you don't even know. Then you can second guess, was that the right thing to say? Because my often go-to would be, Jonathan Winter said this to me once. He was a guest on America's Funniest Home Videos, and I loved him, and I went to lunch with him in Santa Barbara, and I knew him, and he admitted right away, he was, woo-hoo, you know, and Robin Williams was drawn to him because he was, you know, he climbed naked to the top of a sailboat and they put him away. They put me away, you know, as they took him away.
Right.
And he, I said some dumb pun and he looked at me, this is off the air, and he said, you're much better than that. And, but it wasn't negative. And what was weird was he then started to not do well. He came on so strong. And then started to slowly, because they kept him too long, you know, on camera. And the lights were hot. People were wearing, I think, makeup, kabuki. I don't know what the hell we wore back then. It was so, the lights were so bright. But he started to, like, dwindle off. And that's someone you don't think of dwindling off. You think of, wow, that's one of the funniest improvisational people that will ever live. But that's the risk.
Right.
That's the brilliance of someone that does that, is they take that chance.
That's right. But also, anytime anyone's ever tried to give a critique and got a little cocky, they themselves kind of face plant. It's weird. It's happened to me a couple times. Like whenever someone tries to interrupt my comfortable way of doing it, it's like I realize I was right and they weren't.
Yeah.
It's hard to explain.
Well, no, it's not. It's them. Not. They're cock blocking you. They're actually.
Yeah, maybe. Maybe.
You're in the middle of a solo and somebody comes in and you're like, what? Why?
Yeah. And they go, hey, not so many notes. And then they play and the crowd goes, I don't know.
Where'd that cowbell come from in my solo with the dead?
Yeah. Right.
Well,
you know what I think about puns? I hang around you and other extremely funny people.
Yeah, some of the funniest people on earth because you're funny and you're wonderful.
I have funny calculations in my head. I don't know that I'm, I articulate things incredibly funny, but I calculate, I think, in a pretty funny way. But I find that puns are as funny as the person saying them. And they're kind of earned. Like when someone who doesn't do puns and does incredibly smart comedy all day finally does one, I lose it. I fall apart.
Well, that's the punchline, John. That's what I find a lot of times. You'll watch Dave Chappelle. You'll watch Chris Rock. You'll watch whoever you love, you know, whoever are the best people that we have now, Bill Burr or whoever it is.
Mm-hmm.
And they'll talk for 10 minutes of socially relevant stuff. They'll go through the ins and outs. They'll get laughs, you know, throughout. But then the punchline is sometimes literally a pun, which would be a dad joke, not necessarily because maybe an F-bomb's been thrown in so that, that buffers the dad joke. I think that was kind of what I did once I started hitting touring after the family stuff ended. But it's not intentional. It's done just because that's where you're led. But
great. You know, Carlin was the king of that.
Oh, my God. He was a wordsmith. He was a wordsmith and a bit of a prophet because you could watch one of his things right now. I'm sure you've been seeing some of his clips. And
I think about him every month.
Holy shit, this is what's going on right now. Nothing has changed. Nothing.
So I always think, what would he have said about this or said about that?
And he said it already, but what would he say about this pandemic? That's an interesting thought. It's like,
I think about it all the time.
Yeah.
But Carlin would tell incredibly kind of sociologically based jokes. And then as if he knew he had given you too much coursework, he would say, one time in, you know, breaking after doing a huge bit that was a real thinker, as David Spade would say, he said one time, you ever get hit in the head with an axe and right before you die, you get a cool gust of air right through your brain. And that was it. He kind of knew that I just gave you some heavy coursework. And now I'm going to ask you, have you ever been hit in the head with an axe and right before you, I don't know if I'm paraphrasing it, but you get a cool breeze right in your brain.
Yeah.
And I just thought that was such great exhale, inhale.
Well, it was done as a philosopher would do it. It was a comedic philosopher, which is a statement without a punchline. It doesn't need a follow-up because it opens the whole thing up.
But isn't it also just really honest in your tastes? It's really honest in what makes you laugh. You go, sometimes I just like to see something legendarily. Like for me, I love to see stupid things.
But that's why you like me.
No, you're different. You occupy a different, your brain scan. I would love to see your brain scan. I mean, I wouldn't understand how to read a brain scan, but I would just love for someone who knows how to do brain scans to do it and then tell me why yours lights up different than anyone else's. And I'm drawn to those people.
Yeah, it's the labyrinths. It's the things where you go off trail and then you come back to it and then you go, wow, there's a center brain nodule that's operating all of this. It's a hard drive in the middle that everything else is floating around.
Mm-hmm.
And you look at...
That's it. Very interesting.
Look at what Dave Chappelle does. And he goes, and he's a dear friend of yours, and he's just one of the sweetest people alive. And he does it because he can't help it. And he's very much feels the human condition in a real way. And he'll dive... I always have this... I only have one metaphor, but he'll dive into a swimming pool with no water in it. And he's doing it, and he's taking the audience with him. And then they're like, how the hell is he going to dig out of this? But he's already engineered the end point. So the question is, how does he swim to that with no water in the pool? And then he gets there. And that's the success of it. And people can't believe it because there's a huge amount of skill involved in, and an incredible amount of work. I mean, it's constant on stage for 7 or 8 hours at a time.
No, I know. But it's a really unknown variable. And like, he also has a lot of charm he plays off of. So he can be funny bones and he can go back to material on and off. And sometimes at the same time, he's switching off on the same joke.
Right.
Between funny bones and great material. That's why you don't get tired of Dave Chappelle. When Dave Chappelle does an hour, you're not tired because you have gotten three different comics.
Yes, you've gone through a few emotions. Yeah. I'm actually in my old age, kind of at 63, kind of, and I was about to go do a new hour special the end of the year, but that's going to have to wait a year. We're all waiting a year when we have anything that involves.
I'm retired.
Yeah. You're retired for a little bit. I mean, you can.
Yeah, but it's the only way to look at it. Only way to look at it is that you're retired for me.
Right. But are you going to write during this, or you don't even know? You probably will.
I don't write about things as they happen. I write about things that did happen from the perspective of someone who has enough complete view of a situation to be able to write about it. And I'm also not sure, Bob, that any of this stuff certainly wouldn't be the only reason not to write. But I'm not sure that any of this stuff is going to be a photo album we're going to want to open up and slowly turn the pages of and be nostalgic for any of this. I don't think that this is a document. I don't think this is a time to musically document. I'm just not sure. I don't think that it is. I don't want to bet against myself, but I mean, what do you think?
Well, comedically, it's different because here I was with an hour to go of new stuff, and it was all different. It had different shades. Yes, I've been influenced not by the material or the style or anything because my style is ingrained for 40 years. But watching Dave, watching Bill, watching so many people be so thoughtful in how they're doing stuff. My range of stand-up has changed a lot. I'm telling longer stories. I'm talking about racism when I was a kid. I'm making the present relevant without hitting the present, because hitting the present is what's so painful. That's what made me want to go out and be funny again.
Oh, that's interesting.
But with music, just to finish the stand-up thought, when this is over and I'm out, and even if I've been tested and I'm clean, I can't put people in a room that could give it to each other. I can't be there and feel that.
No, I know.
Right. So there's going to be 7 to 10 minutes of this horrible time, because it's like someone had to talk about the Great Depression after it was over, even though it was.
Yeah, but I mean, does everyone need to talk about the Great Depression?
No. And some people don't.
And are you, and by the way,
and my job is to entertain
if you don't?
And no. But I want to entertain people. The question is, what was funny out of it that they shared? But you can't help but tee up. Because people are closer now than they were in some ways.
Yeah, that's right. But there's just less real estate to set up your little tent on and go, here's my perspective of this. When the world is shut down, there's just less of the pie to get a slice of in terms of having a unique perspective. I mean, just this sort of aesthetic of watching someone play music. And God bless people who are playing music and trying to raise of money and trying to entertain people. And I did it on Current Mood last week, but
that's what I was going to say. I'm sorry.
There's just something aesthetically limited about sitting in front of an iPhone, too far away from it if you want to get far enough away from the iPhone to be seen in totality, you're too far away from the iPhone to be heard clearly. So now I can see all of you, but I can hardly hear you. And I see people just throwing emojis up in front of your face as you're playing, and there's just not enough bandwidth, literally or figuratively right now, enough bandwidth to allow so many individuals to express their individuality. That's the first time. Look, it was a crowded world a year ago, but there was still enough innovation and creativity and cleverness that people could use to sort of find their little nook. But now you've basically done away with 99% of the experience that people sort of interact with in the world, and everybody's fighting. I mean, how many jokes about what day is it? I did a what day is it joke on Sunday.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, I'm just not sure. I don't know.
As we talk, there are a million more Instagram lives going on right now. And so people don't know what friend to go to or what person they love. But then I noticed some musicians are setting up full-on studio quality everything. They've got the mic for the guitar. They got the mic for their voice. It's all the finest equipment. They've got a soundboard. They have an engineer in a safe room. And it still doesn't sound good. It's still not coming off like I'm watching, you know, VH1 Sessions. You know, it's
I agree. I agree. But I agree, and I don't want to agree because it's what I do for a living. And I also want to side with the idea of being encouraging and you know, and open-minded and looking for that way that we can all connect and play music and jam together. I think technology is probably 2 years behind us all playing music in real time with each other.
Oh, yeah. I mean, Zoom, you know? Zoom is like a baby. It's like a flip phone right now.
That's right.
Zoom is going to be the technology, what Apple's going to make, what Microsoft's going to make. When it's not an outside vendor, it's going to be insane. You're going to have different angles. There's going to be two to three cameras in your computer.
Yeah. That's right. You're right, Bob. There will be more than one camera. That's
right. Because that's what...
Yeah.
You know what we're going to do real quick? You're going to love this. It's going to be great because Lent's not important. We're going to take a very quick break because someone wants to hear this. All right. That was a comfortable break.
you know, it'd be a wild Zoom feature is if in a meeting you could secretly challenge another Zoom participant to like side games that nobody could see but the two of you, like the paper football,
right?
With the person making the field goal with their hand,
right?
And so as you're listening, you can still dick off with your cohort.
I think you can do it. I've been in some meetings and it took me a while because half the people on my meetings, if I'm on a board meeting of, you know, my Scleroderma Research Foundation, which you've been beyond kind, be so incredibly, amazingly generous. And it's kind of how we connected. I don't know. It must be 14 years ago now. It's a long time ago now.
A long time ago.
Yeah. And my dad had just died and we went out and you did stand up and it was,
you were the first person ever brought me on stage
at the Laugh Factory.
And I'll never forget it because I got the bug that night. I bombed. I didn't bomb. I just didn't do well.
You didn't bomb, but we talked about it beforehand, and you were kind of going with my influence of what I find funny, which is, you know, animal-human sexual relations, which John Oliver makes a meal out of it sometimes, which is a great, it's kind of his go-to when he's in the middle of where he's got himself in thick water with politics.
Yeah, that's right. But everybody's first attempt at comedy is dirty. That's what I think.
You had an animal with cloven hooves, and you were putting them inside people. It was a goat or a,
not.
I said go centaur. I said go minotaur or centaur, but you didn't. You just went goat, and that goat was just going in there.
too soon for centaur comedy. We don't live in. But you know, what's
I think
funny?
It was once the Greek mythology era ended. I think that was it. I mean, that was.
Yeah. No. I mean, that I would not do good in that Jeopardy column.
I'm not mythology. Good in any Jeopardy column. Sometimes I'm in there. How many times have you been mentioned on Jeopardy on the show?
I was mentioned last week. I don't know, maybe three times, but I was mentioned last week, and it speaks to the reach of that show that whenever I get mentioned on Jeopardy, I get like 100 texts from people. So people are watching Jeopardy.
People care more about the New York Times crossword puzzle. That's the other one I hear from. How many times in there?
Maybe once or twice. But I love the puzzle. I do the Monday puzzle and maybe the Tuesday puzzle.
That's when you. That's when I know we're friends because I know you do it and I know your brother does. I love it.
Yeah, my brother Carl and I competitively play the Monday puzzle and we have for 2 years now.
He might be one of the most adorable people on the earth.
My brother is just the best. He's all the good, soft, raw material that I was hewn from, but more. But better.
Not to begrudge any of your other siblings because they're all sweethearts. But this guy,
that's right.
I really hit it off with him because there's an element of you that he has. He has a he's like a sidebar that's a whole different thing. But it feeds the same stuff. I mean, I almost would love to see you guys doing improv.
when he gets going, I can't breathe. I cannot breathe when he's. But I mean, I think it's probably got a. I don't know, upset some of my friends who've known me for years that I laugh. but that when Carl comes around, I'm on the floor.
Well,
like I'm on the floor.
Does he send you video? Does he send you video messages?
Yeah.
Yeah. So he said he started sending me video messages years ago, and because we met many years ago also and hit it off right away. And then Kelly and I would get a video message from him, and then I had to respond because it was so damn funny. And then he ends it by saying, I'm sending you cookies.
Oh, no. He's so beautifully schizophrenic between doing cross-stitching and coming up with the dirtiest possible jokes. It's funny because...
Well, that's who I am.
Carl and I are... Yeah, you are. You are. And I don't do it very well. This goes back to me just... It just didn't suit me to be dirty. I like the
you laugh
alchemy.
At it. You respond. You laugh at it if it's coming from good intentions. If you get why it's being said. Some people hear something dirty come out of my mouth, for example, and think that I mean it. You know, and think that. But whereas all it's doing is, you know, it's not just a flag for freedom of speech. It's also like, how absurd is this? That it's just a 9-year-old kid saying something bad that has good timing.
That's right. Okay, so being dirty is like barium for a joke. The dirtiness is the tracer fire for the routing of the joke. The dirtiness is the money on the table for the card game. Otherwise, you're just playing cards.
Right.
So,
which is okay, too, because there's people, and we know who they are, and they're amazing, and they don't curse. I mean, Jerry Seinfeld, you watch an hour and 10 of that, and you go, my God, that was good.
Exquisite.
It's so skillful, but it's a choice, you know. And then I'll hear.
You go.
Well, I like dead air. We could do nothing for a minute. Some people are scared of it. But there's people like Bill Cosby, who's, you know, obviously been revered by the world at this point. He would always be upset if he was mad at me because I cursed in my stand-up. He goes, you know, you have responsibility and you shouldn't curse. And meanwhile, you know, he was spraying something on somebody's sweater. You know, I just don't.
Well, again, it goes back to what we were saying when you're talking about Jonathan Winters. Every time anybody ever tried to scold me for something I was naturally doing, the thing they were doing to try to instruct me how to be failed.
It also made me, and I'm sure it made you, more of a bad boy. It made us want to rebel a little bit more, like when I was told, you know, my whole life, don't say that, don't do that. I do it. I report for a teacher in sixth grade in English, and she'd go, you're my student, not my entertainer, D-. But it was a hilarious paper, you know, but I never read the Odyssey, so I made up the paper, you know.
Oh, so. I made up book reports all the time and laughed my face off as I was writing book reports, because the teacher never asked for the book. Bob, the teacher would say, do a book report, but never asked to produce the book.
Right.
So at some point I realized I don't need the book. And I had such a fun. Look,
how was your grade? How did you get graded on that?
Probably really good, because I got to write the book in my head. I don't do well with institutionalized learning, but open themed assignments in school. I mean, I'll never forget that I was in the sixth grade and we had subject and predicate. And you would get the subject of the sentence and have to finish the sentence with whatever predicate you wanted.
Well, that's great. That's
a
game.
It was the only time I was 100% engaged in school. Anything that was open theme just blew my mind.
Right.
But it wasn't until I tried to be dirty and failed, not just any one time, but you know, the first time you brought me on stage. I do think if you had 1,000 people who had thought about doing comedy and put them on stage over 1,000 different periods, 850 of them's first joke would have had cum in it.
Yeah, I never said that. I would say it in a, that's not true. I did say it, but not in a graphic sense. I would do it as a pun. It was done as a pun. That was it. You know, it was like.
But why do you think it is that people think their first joke should be dirty?
My first 7 minutes were clean, but they were PG. You know, they were.
What was the pun you did? Sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off.
Oh, the pun was girls come up to me and go, I grew up watching you. And I say, good, now you're going to go down watching me. And that was, you know, that's 18 years ago. That can't be done now. And that is
no.
That is what is rightfully changed. But I'm changing stuff because I don't want to hurt anybody. And I'm not even feel. I'm going, oh, my God, I don't mean that. I'm just saying what's wrong. I'm saying what's wrong for a point and to make you laugh. And unfortunately, we got a bunch of misogynist, you know, eggheads that just want filth. They just want to hear filth. And well, by the way, they're entitled. And there's plenty of people they can go to for that, you know? There's someone I really like now who kind of reminds me of when I did my special That Ain't Right in 2007 and on HBO, and it really offended a lot of people, and I said, fuck, every couple of seconds as a rim shot. And it was out of nerves. I was playing NYU. The audience was 20 or 19, and it just happened. It was just, that was the show. And I watched Nikki Glaser, and she's saying stuff in her last Netflix special, and I'm like, but that's pretty blue. You know, she's going into graphic sex description, but she's such a sweetheart and such a good person and battling to be honest, especially in her, all of the stuff she's about to do, because she's kind of, her star's kind of rising right now.
That's true. Yeah, I love her.
And she's a sweetheart. And so if a person's a good person, I don't know if people thought that I wasn't, because I played the dad. And when you and I met, you had been going, oh, man, all they think is my body's a wonderland, and I don't want to be.
Sure.
Which is a great song. I'm sorry. It's amazing. But then it's the same for you. It was probably bubblegum to you. It's like, oh, my God, I wrote a pop song. What the hell happened? But when you wrote it, did you feel that? Were you thinking that? Or
No.
You were in the zone. You loved it when you wrote it.
I loved it when I wrote it.
And for me, doing a family show, and that's what we kind of connected on immediately, it's like, Bob, you went and changed your image. How the hell did you do that? And I went, well, it took 7 years, 8 years.
Oh, listen.
You know.
So the way an image works is almost exactly like an image. A public image is almost exactly like an image, where the shutter opens for a split second, and then the shutter closes, and an image is burnt into the emulsion of the film.
Yep.
And all it is a split second, and the image is taken.
And that's it. And it takes 1 second. It's a microfiche.
A
Viewmaster. That's their impression of you forever, which is, wouldn't matter.
It takes a very long time.
Yeah. But it wouldn't matter if it wasn't an audience that you're relying on or fans or people. I mean, you realize that you are considered, I mean, people are wooed by you, you know, men and women and girls. They're just like, you're one of those very special people that they're in love with. And then the new flavors come around, but they go, no, that's not John. You got so much depth to you. And as you've gotten older, and I've watched you grow, you've grown up good.
Thank you.
I knew
you before you got married, or, you know, I knew you when you were dating.
Yeah, I was doing some stupid stuff. I think we
were. Well, we all were doing.
Yeah, it was kind of fun, but I.
You know, Sorry, you go.
Well, I was just going to say that the reason that there's such a wonderful love of you, and of course resentment, which comes with that, from dudes that go, "Oh, you're in love with John Mayer. Mm-hmm. That's who's your go-to?" You know, and
yeah. I make a dandy villain in that way. I like it.
Well, but I love that you have that dark side, because otherwise you're looking at a Kennedy that did no wrong, you know.
Well, that's more idea than man. I call that more idea than man.
Yeah, they're basing it on, I look like your dentist or accountant, so people trust me, and then they go, wait a minute, what's wrong with him? I can't let him near my kids. And it's like, no, dude.
I might be the other way around, you know, based on what people tell me. They're surprised that I didn't do when I met them. You know, I'll meet someone and they'll go like, wow, you were actually really nice to me. And I go, how bad has my reputation been in this circle that me being nice to you blew your mind? And then I used to want to correct it. And then as I got older, I was like, it's not the worst thing in the world to take on an incorrect, but larger than life kind of feel. I go, fine. Let it be more idea than man there. I'm not going to go door to door and try to change people's minds, because at some point you just become a placeholder for an idea. So the idea of me being a Lothario doesn't have as much to do with what I've actually done in my life, but it's just the idea space that that sort of recognized me there. And then I could go, look, you're the guy with the guitar, the love him and leave him guy with the guitar. Is that particularly correct? Doesn't need to be particularly correct,
but it's not. You're that sometimes, but there's so much range in what you do, and I became a lover of your music, and there's, it's funny because I was fortunate enough to be in the studio with you when you were working on Paradise Valley, we went for sushi afterward. But you were literally finishing what became one of my favorite songs of yours, and you played it on your last tour, which made me so damn happy, which is Badge and Gun. Which is,
oh yeah, I played it because
it's like, it to me, that is, there's nothing, that's a song of courage, that is a song of your marching through life, and that struck me as you're a journeyman, and you're just moving forward, you're the sheriff in town, and you're just going to go take care of things in a kind and honest way, and a strong way. It's not at all a romantic ballad, except romance for freedom and for moving forward.
Yeah, well said. Romance for freedom.
And then you were kind enough to give me a song, Say. I'm sorry, you gave me Who Says. I just love Say. I don't know why, but they're two songs that make me cry a bit. You know, Who Says.
Oh, thank you.
You know, and you've got, and this.
I love that song.
Who Says, right?
Yeah, I love that song. I thought that song was going to be huge. The day I wrote it and listened back to it, I couldn't stop listening back to it. I couldn't believe I owned it. Oh my God, I own this now. And I drove across town the next day to play it for a friend. Listen to this song. Oh my God, listen to the song. I said, I'm going to play this song around the world. This song's going to take me around the world. And it didn't. But
I thought it did, because it's an anthem. It's an anthem.
So
it
didn't until it did. It didn't until it did. Meaning, and this is a different conversation, but the scope of view that people have for the success or lack thereof of something that's released, whether it's a Netflix special or a movie or a song, is relegated to just the release week and the commercial moment, the blip.
And where people are really at matters, in their heads, it's the lasting of it is the
truth. For that month. So forget about release month. I learned to forget about release month now more than ever. Where does the song end up? And I remember I went on tour this time last year. I was in like Indonesia, and I was playing that song, and that song was being sung back to me as if it were the biggest hit on the radio that ever existed. And I remember being like, I was right that the song was special. The readout didn't come until 10 years later.
Yeah, I've had that with everything I've ever done.
but then you learn to trust that.
Yeah, because it's your art. It's what's coming out of you. But I mean, music is, you know what? Let's just take another break real quick, because you're not going anywhere. I know you have a life, but we'll be right back. All right, so we are back, and I got to go back to the music thing, because you picked up a guitar at how old? Was that your first instrument, period?
The first guitar I picked up that I owned, I was 13. Yeah, that's when I was given an acoustic. Well, my father rented me an acoustic from the music store, and I was going to take lessons. But I didn't take lessons for like a week or two before I got, until I got the guitar, a week or two after I got the guitar. So I was left with a guitar with no lessons and extreme curiosity for the instrument, which I just think is the best combination.
Right.
If you're going to, anybody listening, if you want a kid to learn guitar, take lessons. But for the first couple of weeks, just sit and stare at it in your own way. And I still play the guitar with a certain technique that I taught myself that first week, you know? So I'm a weird mix of scholarship and just complete, like, just complete random incorrect, you know, ways to look at it.
Did you
on 13.
Did you graduate from a music school?
I went to Berklee College of Music, but I didn't graduate. I left after 1 year. I always likened it to like being read this. Hold on a second. I do this thing with my dog. Come. Okay.
Wait a minute. Don't say it like that. That didn't sound right.
No, I have to do it. Routine is how I survive out here.
By the way, if you have a dog, if you have a dog that can do that on cue, I'd say, you know, you got to start putting that out there online.
We got to start doing it. We have an act. What do you call yourselves?
mayor and cum.
Yeah. I likened it to like being read the specials at a restaurant, but you know what you want to eat already. And you're like, okay, shut up. I know. I got it.
Right.
And after the first year of college, I knew what I wanted to eat. And I wanted to eat singing, songwriting. And so I went and did that. And within a couple of years was doing it full time. You know, so I was lucky that way. Cause most people who jump ship don't jump onto another bigger ship.
Right. Well, you've also been responsible for, and I was kind of there with you. We were at dinner when you were running after, I think it was Phil Lesh, wasn't it?
At Craig's, yeah.
And you were saying, hey, can we put this together again? You know, I'd love to see if the dead could get back. And he was reluctant.
Well, I told him that I'd love to play with him up in, or maybe I just connected with him and then he asked me to come up and play with him at his place in San Francisco. But the Phil thing is separate from Dead and Company. Phil just didn't want to go back out.
But that was in the back of your mind to include him in there as well, correct?
Well, you could talk about, you know, you have kids, right? So you talk about who you wish you'd met or what you would have done, but then you wouldn't have had the kids you had. And yeah. Phil had come out before I'd met O'Teal, who plays bass in the band. I would have thought that was the greatest thing in the world, but it's a funny trade-off because O'Teal's so great in this band that I don't want to say that I really wish. It's hard, right? Because, of course, Phil and the band would make it closer genetically to the Grateful Dead. But O'Teal is such a great addition and I think modernizes it in a certain way. And I would have been happy either way. But I'm really, really happy with the way the band is. And it's tough to cancel this tour. We canceled the tour this week.
Oh.
And that's a tough one, man. That's a tough one.
Are they going to do a next year reschedule if all this
is done and done?
Right. You're going to look at an audience wearing masks. And then.
I hope not. Let me ask you a question.
For comedy, how do I do a special with a bunch of people wearing masks? I mean,
I don't think you'll do it till they lick this thing.
Yeah.
Which you shouldn't do. You shouldn't lick it.
No, especially
you shouldn't lick
UPS boxes, Amazon. Do not lick and don't lick the UPS driver.
Don't lick the UPS driver.
I don't think. Unless he's really hot.
follow your muse. But
you brought the dead. You brought the dead back from the dead. I mean, not to say that they aren't amazing and they wouldn't have gone on tour, but I don't think they would have been in 80,000 seat stadiums if this hadn't have happened. And then you're playing 20 minute Jerry Garcia solos, almost word perfect, but then in your own style, you still were able to do that because you've got this thing that just happens. You just disappear.
Yeah, but that's also me trying and not doing it well enough, which is a wonderful technique for being yourself. Failing to sound exactly like the person you want to sound like is a wonderful way to sound like yourself.
Right.
So I am not necessarily thinking this thing from scratch going, okay, I'm going to like do Jerry-esque things, but I'm still going to sound like me. No, it's more like I want to sound just like Jerry. And then the way I naturally obviously don't, that's your personality. It's like music doesn't let you lie. You just can't. You could lie for 30 seconds, but not for 3 hours.
There aren't many people that can. Go ahead. Sorry. You're what?
No, no. Well, I mean, you try to sound like who you want to sound like, and you just will always end up sounding like you.
It's amazing to me because you've been able to. There are people that do it. You know, there's cover bands. There's, you know, here we are. We're going to see the Rolling Stones cover band. In, bumfuck Illinois, and they're playing every night, you know, and the Righteous Brothers are still out, but the one of them passed on, Bobby, so he's been replaced, but Bill Medley is still there, so they're singing Unchained Melody, and they've always been social distancing, by the way, the new Righteous Brothers. and I had a horrible thought, and I know Bill Medley through Stamos and through other people, and he's a lovely guy, and he was so nice. He had my wife and her mom come backstage in Vegas, and I think that's when they got coronavirus.
but
I do think I had it. I don't know. Do you think you had it, by the way?
Yes.
Yeah.
I think I had.
You had a flu that just knocked you on your ass. For
But I think I had it in December. So I don't know if that makes sense. I don't want to be one of these guys who says he thinks he had it, but I sure
we'll find out. Yeah, I want to get it. And I made a pun, a stupid pun, and it made my wife laugh, and that's my audience right now. And I said, you know, all we hear is about the antibody test. What about Uncle Body? Why isn't he getting any recognition? Thank you. Thank you, John. Thank you. Because Uncle Body's getting nothing. And if I tweeted that, right, all I would get would be hate back. You know, like, oh, come on.
Yeah.
Another dad joke. Whack, whack, whack. Oh, I got one. I think I have that on here. Hold on.
Oh, you have it.
That's what you, when you get the board, you get to have that.
Yes. You have the board. You have the
nothing.
Board.
But about my joke about Bill Medley, and I hope he doesn't take offense to this, but I was thinking he's got another guy that's playing Bobby, and they're singing, you know, You've Lost That Love and Feeling. And I was thinking, it wouldn't it be interesting if it was just Bill Medley and a sheep? And then they'd be singing, and it would be Bill, because sometimes Bill would sing solos by himself because these are the really famous songs, right? So he'd be singing, you know, baby, and then the sheep would go, baby, and then he'd go, baby, baby, bring it on back, bring it on back, you know. So I don't know where you do
one
that.
Articulate sheep.
Yeah, but I know I got the sheep down, but I just stole it from Jim Brewer years ago. I didn't know any better. Yeah. And I've been around a lot of sheep.
Yeah, it sounds like it.
Yeah, that right?
A great sheep.
How could you not?
Yeah.
No. How could you? Sheep.
Well, look, the thing about Grateful Dead music that allows it, and now, by the way, I think more than any other band, Grateful Dead cover bands, quote unquote, pull more people and give a more genuinely exciting time than any other cover band in music. And that's just because of how open the compositions are song-wise. So,
right.
Like, you could, if the Stones cover band, they're going to play those songs like the record. And that's cool too, but the Dead cover bands, and I don't even know, I guess they call themselves cover bands. It's really almost like saying that a jazz quartet would be a Miles Davis cover band. It's like, no, they're playing the idiom of music that music sort of created. So bop is really created by, I don't know, a dozen people at most. Maybe even five people. Maybe I was just being a pussy. Five people, you know. And this music of Grateful Dead is both an idiom and a band's catalog. So
right,
you can go see a Grateful Dead cover band, but you're also going to hear something that just that band could. There's no bad Scarlet Begonias. I've heard Scarlet Begonias played by 100 cover bands. If that's what you want to feel that night and go out with your friends, that's always going to work. And that's a testament to the composition. For us now, for whatever reason, everybody brought, I don't think I brought them back from anything. I think we all brought something to one another. And
I didn't mean to intimate that. I didn't mean to
suggest not at all,
that they couldn't have filled all those seats. They would have. I mean, them coming back was huge.
And I couldn't have had thousands of people who otherwise wouldn't have paid me any attention watch me play guitar now.
Well,
so
you've got different. Really it gave perfect. You stripes. We talked about this when you were doing it.
Yeah.
And we were all over the place. Wherever you were, I would try to be there. And it's just beautiful. I mean,
it's beautiful. That's why it's hard to cancel this one.
It's something about all the people that you bring together. You bring the band together. They feel the energy from it. And it's also you regarding them so high and them regarding you so high and everybody in the audience is high. So it kind of
great.
Is it genuine? Yeah. And I knew I was going to go there at the end, but
you still got me.
That was a really quick decision. That was like Jeopardy for me, but
you still got me.
No, I got it. I got something going, but is there anything, I don't want to say this. I got Kelly in the other room. So Kelly is, we're finding out that we actually truly love each other, which is during this time, you find out, you know, people are going to split up after this thing's over, you know, after all safety measures are lifted and we're all back into whatever world that's fully polluted again. And everybody's back and you're allowed to vote again. Things like that. Matt, you've got a dog that you love more than anything, right?
Yes, I do.
And now is there,
go for it.
You're, You're happy being, I'm actually talking to you the way I would if we were just together, but I realize we're out there in the world, but you're happy very much so being with yourself right now, right?
Yes. I know how to do it. I can do it. I don't want to do it for all my 40s. I had a plan, I guess, that got sidelined, and so did everyone else's. But I'm pretty good. And look, I'm lucky because my life was always kind of a remote living experience. I was always living in a hotel room, different. I was raised in my adult life to live in a different spot every day and to roll the punches and go, well, you know this. You go, well, we're in Cleveland. Day off.
Yeah.
All right. Well, I guess I'll leave.
I think I'd be in Cleveland right now, by the way. That's where I was going to be.
Really?
Yeah.
You know, I'm very adaptable. And that's why I say, look, there are no famous people right now. I think it's a misnomer to try to be famous right now because you need a public to be famous. And there is literally no public.
And
I think to keep knocking on the door of fame right now is just going to burn everybody out on
it's
you
reprehensible.
And you out on the experience.
It's gross because you're cashing
in
on
gross.
It.
Well, it's not gross.
What I'm saying is people that only want to be famous, if that's their goal, then that was never my goal. My goal was, oh God, I'm going to make films.
Yeah, because you're hyper talented. So you never, okay, here's the breakdown. Those who are talented and know it, which is different than those are two different camps, but those who are talented and know it have the luxury of not needing fame because they know it's going to come. So I never looked, and this might surprise people, I never, ever, 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 ever looked at fame as the core philosophy of my life. I always knew, look, there's no way that you can be a great guitar player if you dreamed about being a great guitar player and not have a certain level of recognition for it.
Correct.
There's no way that you could be a great singer-songwriter and not have any level of recognition for it. So
there has to be narcissism in there in the positive sense of narcissism, not
sure.
I talk
well,
about
no
myself.
There's
an
ego. There's positive ego.
I like being
there's
just
positive,
I'm pure id.
I'm yeah, I get it. I have that too, and I am self-absorbed, but I don't know that I am literally self-absorbed. I am always absorbed in my thoughts and in the way I want to express myself and in the way the world is changing and how that affects my thoughts and what I could do to write something, or even if you're trying to write something for someone else, you're still absorbed in your own process. So I'm very self-absorbed, but not narcissistic.
But everyone is so much that way. That, you know, there are people that are in, one of my daughters is in Brooklyn with her boyfriend, and they're in an apartment, and it's scary there right now. It's very scary. So everyone is sharing their own self-awareness of where they're at and how they're dealing with it. And there's people out there that are having an incredibly rough time. And we have the luxury of being able to be good friends and have comfortable surroundings while this unifying thing is going on that we're still upset about. And it'll be changing, and there will be good things to come from it. But it's, you know what, we'll take one more quick break and then we'll wrap it up, because I'm sure you've got something you have to do and you must eat. You might be hungry, right?
I'm going to eat after this, but not after hearing from this wonderful next sponsor.
Hey there. All right. Boy, that was refreshing. I just, I can't get enough of room fresheners. I don't know what it was. It was probably something, some manscaping thing, you know, that you get really, with a podcast, you get unusual sponsors and things that, I mean, you think about years ago, Snapple didn't exist till Howard Stern started selling it.
That's right.
He put it on the map. I don't know if he got a piece, but I know he made money. But podcasts.
That was back before people got the piece.
Yeah, I think maybe that. Well, I don't know. He was always a smart businessman. But I mean, for me.
It wasn't on the menu back then. You know, it wasn't on the menu in 1992 to say, give me a part of the company. That just wasn't done.
I could have owned part of Red Bull. I was, give us $20,000, Bob. You'll be with 20 people, and Red Bull you'll have a percentage of. And it would have been beyond a fortune. There were only 20 people. And I went, I can't do this. It makes my heart pound. So
I was going to say, you'd be at VFib. you'd have ventricular fibrillation.
It's unbelievable, but it's on my rider to have sugar-free Red Bull if I'm too tired.
No, I love a sugar. It does a thing, doesn't it? Doesn't it do a thing?
Right before, and if I have to.
It does a real thing.
I have no choice sometimes because I just did a gig the night before. I just got to the place. I got a sound check. I'm going to lay down and try to meditate. Then I got to work out the new thing I'm working on. And then
I get it.
And you put the straw in. You put a straw in. And you can ask for a paper straw, but they still got a billion plastic ones left. I mean, what am I supposed to do? Not use it?
I don't know, but it's really an over-the-counter beverage. It's like it has medical indications. You go, I didn't sleep well last night. I got a gig tonight. I just got to get myself through this Red Bull.
Right.
It works.
And CVS, my doctor won't call in and I can't get anything there. So.
Can you call in a prescription for Red Bull, please? Thank you.
Instacart, but, deliver just nine cases of Red Bull to my house. Because I don't know
about you, but I'm using Red Bull off label. I'm just drinking it for the.
Have you tried the Mexican Red Bull? It's much sweeter.
That's funny. It's got pure cane sugar in it.
Yeah, it's awesome. It actually has cocaine in it. We're almost there.
That's
funny. Now, are you missing? Touring is. I love stopping. So part of this has been relaxing for me, even though I'm working all the time. But for you, you've always been like this, where you needed to go away and you're lucky that you're able to.
And so, I was making another record. So I was going to the studio every day having an absolute blast. I mean, I think I'm halfway through what I think is a really special record, like really special. So I had a life going, and I wasn't on social media for the whole year up until,
year.
I wasn't on, up until this started because I was just disappearing and going to the studio and I wanted to make, maybe by now I would have been mixing and having a song out for people for the summer. And we closed up shop on March 11th. And that was actually before people really hunkered down. It was about a week before the stay-at-home orders kind of started to hit. And I, came out to the woods. And look, I'm really lucky I was able to take care of anybody who works with me.
Right.
And I don't like to say for me, but with me. I'm really lucky that if 2, 5, 10 years ago, hey, honey, I think I'm going to go work with this schmuck John Mayer. They're like, they're okay. Like, they're okay. And I know that I can go on tour after this and we can refill the coffers. I'm really lucky. So I'm really lucky that anybody who was on staff, so to speak, is going to be okay. That part is awesome to be able to do that. But I'm not the type of person to look at a months-long scenario as something detrimental. What I do is rewrite the script so that it's okay.
And that's how I've always lived. That's how I'm surviving. And fortunately, I've been busier than I expected to be, but I didn't expect it to be such a placeholder where I'd be out on the road working on material and getting a special out, which is like recording an album. But couldn't you have home studio capabilities. Couldn't you do...
Yes.
Couldn't you do it now, or you just want to be part of what we're all going
through? I also have a treadmill and some weights. Couldn't I just also work out now and get in shape? Well, yeah, but if you don't know the next time you'll be seen or heard or what anybody will be thinking or expecting, and everything inside of you is the circuitry is changing over as we speak from one way of thinking to another, how are you going to A, find a song, B, be sure that it's authentic in any way, and C, most importantly, I think, have any reassurance that it's going to resonate with a world we're not sure is going to be there to resonate with it in the certain way you hope they are.
Right.
We know there's going to be a world.
Yeah.
We don't know what world.
And that's like what I'm doing right now. I'm kind of trying to make these episodes evergreen and I get to talk to people, but when I to make something evergreen and I call people because they leave a number on the thing on the menu and they don't know I'm going to call. I tell them between these hours I'm going to call them, and they're so happy to talk to somebody. And some people talk to me for like 30 minutes. I can't use all that. They're telling me all their stuff and how sad they are or how, they'll want me to be raunchy or whatever, but they're really, it's not, it's not evergreen. It's stuff that is, you know, in quarantine, in pandemic, how they're getting along during it, and how they don't work, or how they, you know, were.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know that this is. Okay. I don't even know how this time is going to be regarded in the memory. I don't know if, by the way, I don't know if this is seen 10 years from now as a weird dream that in your mind accordion compresses down to a week. It feels like the strangest week. I don't know if people are going to be so traumatized by it that they won't even want to hear a mention of it. You know what I mean?
I think
Aren't there a generation of men who didn't want to talk about the things they saw?
Yeah. I mean, we're talking about the Black Plague and things, which we all, we know it. You say it and you go, oh, that was really bad. Right. And we don't know how many people died. There's 10,000 times more people than there were then. And, you know, I mean, I do think that people are going to be tired of hearing about it. They're going to, and when I've been doing shows before, right up, and I'm sure you feel the same thing, right before all this happened, because of all the political dissension and people mad at each other from every side of the Mason-Dixon line, upside, downside, like a cootie catcher of differences and anger and anger. And that's what sent me out to make people laugh and get their minds off of it.
Sure.
So if I'm going to have 7 minutes of pandemic material, it's not going to be about the disease. It's going to be about.
That's right.
Remember that time we were just alone in the house together? Well, here's a couple things. And that'll get old. Yep. You got to get rid of that. Otherwise, and for you, you'd be writing a lot of melancholy songs. A lot of songwriters are probably just, this is a nice acoustic time.
Or I don't even know. If a song that's meant to be triumphant is going to work either. I don't see, there's no music for this time.
It's hard to be inspired, wake up in the morning, unless you start humming something, unless something happens, unless it just happens.
I'm writing ditties. That's right. That's why I write ditties now, Bob. I write ditties for current mood. I think ditties are keeping me happy.
Right.
It's a use of writing. I have a couple of song ideas that I think are interesting, but they're meant to be written in retrospect. And, you know, the metaphor I think that works for me is that we're all sort of in a bank hostage standoff, and we're all sitting on the bank floor right now.
Right.
And we're not scared for our life. The gun isn't pointed at us, but we know that the robbers are now in the vault with the bank manager on the other side of the bank, but we can't leave, and we're just sitting there in the bank. And we really would like to get let out.
It's dog day afternoon. We're all
right. Right.
There's this criminal thing happening, this pandemic, and then how everybody's dealing with it. It's just wow.
Yeah. And when we're out, when we finally get out, when we finally walk out with our hands up and the SWAT team, you know, gets us freely out of there, there's going to be a guy who goes, by the way, while I was in the bank, I wrote a song about it. Anybody want to hear about that time that we were held hostage in a bank? I wrote a song about it. And everybody's going to go, I would prefer not to hear the song. I lived through it. I don't need to hear the song about being stuck in the bank.
Okay, now you were playing guitar and you took lessons. I was 11 and I took lessons. So it's like you're, to me, Mozart, and I'm Salieri's nephew, Frank. You know? that's how I look at it. Because I had a guitar, but I didn't go above the fifth fret. But there are so many, I did music parodies to start off. Now, I'm going to blast some people right now. Yes, people are sending me, I'm sure they're sending you, links of comedy songs about this. I hate to say it. They're the easiest things in the world to write. They are, there's nothing to them. They are all covering the same subject, which is Lysol. And I don't mean to poo-poo people that are doing it, because if it's bringing you amusement and if the public's liking it and if it does well on TikTok and you're making people happy, that's great. But I'd rather watch you on Current Mood singing The Age of Worry and watching people that I know go up and Rita Wilson go, oh, my God, thank God, I've been having a rough time. Thank you for playing this. And Andy Cohen's up there and just, you know, your inner circle and then your fans. And then it just stopped me and it made me weep. And, you know, John Krasinski's been doing something really special, really.
Yeah, it's really cool.
And the thing he did with Lin-Manuel for the little girl and they sang Hamilton. We won't forget those moments. Those are things that we will take with us. It will be like for some people, oh, we're back. Okay. So that was 6 months, a year, all different stages of time. But we were not going to forget it, because I remember, and I've talked about it ad nauseum my whole, since it happened, since 9/11, that day, that night, every channel was running the footage of the buildings coming down. But
oh yeah.
But Fox Network, not the news, ran Mrs. Doubtfire. And I believe it was my friend Kevin Riley who did it. He was the president, I think, then. Whoever did it, I remember thanking Kevin, and I think he did it. He was one of the people that was responsible for that. But 3 hours with commercials of that rather than that other footage.
Yeah.
It was a gift. Yeah. And that's what I feel like my job is. And I know you feel that way too. If you're going to do something, just let's soothe people during it or make
And to be super honest, I can afford to not keep working on my bonsai tree of fame, right? Like, if you're only on your second record, you might not feel like you can afford to stop sort of communicating and writing and pushing and pushing and pushing. I get that. I don't know what that would be like. Look, 9/11 happened a week before my first record came out, and we drove in a 15-passenger van from Atlanta to New York to play Irving Plaza 1 week after 9/11.
Oh, God.
But we still got to play. We still got to go in front of a crowd and play. And that whole tour was shrouded in anthrax and Cipro. Remember Cipro?
Yeah.
Like, everybody had to get the Cipro and the anthrax and the scares.
I took Cipro and it made me sick. My skin got in a rash and all kinds of crap.
Really? But we got to go and play music on stage. I think if you're 20 and you're about to put your second record out, your first record out, I can't begrudge somebody for continuing to try to use this time to get a leg up. I get that. For me, I'm lucky in that I don't need to do that. And all I want to do with current, you might say maybe current mood is that. I don't think it is, but my rule with my therapist is it's either yes, you're right, no, you're wrong, but most often maybe. So I got to go think about it, but I don't think that current mood is ambitious or aspirational in any other way than maybe when this is all over, if someone comes up to me at a restaurant and they say, hey, you kept me and my company, my family company on a Sunday night. Like you made me feel for 45 minutes normal on a Sunday night. And I think there's other people out there doing that. But my function is not to be a musician right now. I'm telling you, I'm not a famous person right now. I'm your friend, John. Don't you feel this way? You're just everyone's friend, Bob.
Well, that's so interesting. I'll call somebody up because I'm really talking one-on-one, literally. And I just start talking to them like we're talking right now. There's literally no difference. We're all on a level playing field. And
yes.
And the word celebrity has always offended me because that's no discernible talent whatsoever. You can, you know, you got famous, you're on a reality show because you shot a porn film once, you know, accidentally.
You know what offended me? Not calling anyone celebrity, but celebrities calling people who aren't celebrities civilians. I hate it.
Ooh.
I hate it.
People not in show business are civilians, right?
I hate it. I've always hated it.
They wouldn't be in show business without the people that were consuming whatever
they are. But they are civilians. They're not police officers. They're not a U.S. Marshal.
Yeah.
I think that this time is very interesting to illuminate really how little difference there is biologically and socially between someone who's famous technically for something they do for a living and someone who isn't. You're both standing by. You're both just waiting to figure out what's going to happen to your bodies. There is no hierarchy.
Right. Am I going to get it by doing this? I know.
And for me,
I've always felt that way, except when you go out in public and then people, you know, if they take a picture
of
you,
they remind you that you are. I get that.
Exactly. But otherwise I forget. Like, I'll introduce myself to somebody and I'll go, hi, I'm Bob. And they go,
I know you're Bob.
I know who you are. Why do you have to, why are you introducing yourself? I don't know. Cause I'm a person.
I go, cause it's polite.
Well, I never met him. So, you know,
I know, but I am retired for the moment.
You're on a hiatus. You're on a little hiatus. You know.
Let me say that I'm retired and I'll come out.
Okay.
It's the only way it makes sense for me because I'm doing retired guy stuff. I'm walking around my property and fixing things and changing light bulbs.
It's all we're all doing. It's everything. I didn't know there were so many loads of laundry. I did not know.
I've been trying to get these brand new towels to get scratchy for the last 2 weeks, and I'm almost there where they're good and scratchy. Because you know when you get a new towel, they're too soft?
Yeah, well, the bleach will do it. Bleach will harden them up, and it'll also eat through them. But you can inject it into you and cure anything.
That's what I hear. You know, I've heard that. Anyway, I have a saying deep in the back of my head. It's going to be all right because it's got to be all right.
That's right.
Like, it's got to be all right. And that doesn't mean that it's got to be like you want it most to be. But it's got to be all right in the sense that you agree with your own life, that you cooperate with your own life in some way. And nobody is where they most want to be.
Nobody.
But it's got to be okay.
A few people do. A few people that are able to prosper during this time because we need them. We need the stuff that they're doing, you know. But it's also going to be, humanity's gone through this, you know. We just don't have a record for it because we think that 100 years ago is a really long time ago.
Yeah.
And it is.
I thought this the other day. You're right. I thought this the other day. This is not, this has been on one of the sides of the die when you throw it.
Correct.
It's not an alien invasion. This has always been discussed, written about, opined on. It's part of Greek mythology. It's part of all these things.
I thought it was going to be germ warfare, to be honest with you. I thought it was going to be someone, you know, dropping drops into the water, you know, surplus.
Let me ask this question. What if tonight you're watching television? And there's a break-in in the broadcast, and it's a home video camera, and under harsh lighting in a little room, and it's a guy who says, "Greetings, Earth. By now, you have all got the package I have sent you. I have the antidote. I ask all the world leaders to get on a call with you." Would you be psyched about that? Because you'd be like, we have an antidote. Or is that just way too sinister a thought?
Well, it's sinister unless he says, my demands are simple. I want Jessica Alba, Scarlett Johansson, and Charlize Theron. And I want them now, and then I will give... He's just a horny dude.
He's just a horny old guy.
With a green head and just Mars Attack features, you know. He just wants to get laid by a hot Earth woman.
It's an alien... A horny alien.
Just be careful. What if you're in retirement and he wants you? What if he says, "I need John Mayer. I've got the antidote. I need John Mayer. Play for me, John Mayer."
And this is a real Harvard ethics question, isn't it? It's a horny alien.
That's
the funniest joke.
I have here the antidote and an erection.
Oh my God! It's just a horny alien. And if you really want to make it funny, he's horny for Anne Margaret because on his planet, he's just now getting television and movies from the 60s.
I am right
Give
now
me
for
your
her.
Babe. Wait, I want your current hottest babe, Anne Margaret.
And Rita Hayworth.
Because to him, that shit got released yesterday.
Right.
He's just now getting the broadcast.
My favorite comedian is Charlie Chaplin. Well, I don't know why. Why does he have like an...
Bring me Charlie Chaplin.
Why does he sound like the emperor in Shrek? He probably...
I know.
He's an octopus that doesn't speak our language.
These are my funniest... these are the best times. Is somebody pitching a hypothetical and fleshing it out. I could flesh this joke out for 30 minutes with you.
I think it's a 10-part... So I think it's a 10-arc Netflix show.
A horny alien.
But you don't find out till the very, very end.
Till the very end. And what he wants is a long-gone film star who he thinks is still around. Because his aliens live for 9,000 years.
I will not give you the antidote unless you give me Jessica Rabbit. He just has no, right. He has no clue. But he stopped. He said, "I stopped on that frame and just held it."
Yeah. I want your hottest Babe, Walter Matthau. Bring me Walter Matthau. And everyone has to be cool with it. It's like, okay, they're pretty woke up there. Oh, it's funny, man.
They're going to want really silent film stars because that's universal. And they're going to want music. They're going to want Mozart and stuff. Poor guy.
This is you and I now having dinner at Craig's or something. Just
and we will do that. And we have a plan to do it, I believe, on election night. So
we were there the last election night.
That's correct. So let's whatever happens, that'll depend on whether either of us start drinking again. That'll be interesting.
I know. Yeah, let's go to Craig's and watch CNN bring the poll results while a Pomeranian famous on Instagram has a chicken paillard next to us.
someone who was not able to get their roots done in time as we all got out.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Someone whose injections have just dropped and it's all their poor neck looks like a kneecap. I suggest we all go back to being healthy and not get anything done. So when we get out of this, we'll find out that Hollywood just looks like shit.
Yeah. You know what this reminds me of is the scene in Batman, the Tim Burton Batman,
right,
where Joker has put all these things in the cosmetics, and it turns out that the combination of cosmetics is what's toxifying people. So everyone stops wearing makeup and they throw to the news report that Michael Keaton is watching, and everyone on the news just looks terrible and sullen, and they have a pallor in their skin because they're not wearing anything and they're still going on with the news. I think that a lot when I see people, because there are some people you're like, oh, you did your own makeup tonight.
Well,
and that's cool.
I got to tell you, the past few days, I've been watching some people promoting some things that are coming out because they're coming out on television, on Apple TV or on Netflix or whatever, that we're going to be in theaters first. And some things they're going to hold. They'll even hold them a year because they're such expensive movies. But I saw a couple people that I've, you know, that you get crushes on, your star, your music people, the models or whatever. You know, everybody has them. My wife has one right now for Chris Cuomo. She's like, oh, he's so amazing. He loves his wife.
I love Chris Cuomo.
He is. You know what? I direct messaged him to thank him when he was going through this and wish him well. He wrote back to me in 5 minutes and just, sir, you have entertained my family for years. He's just, and look how brave he is to have gone through it. But he's coming from
a
real place, but he's playing the game. Go ahead, sir.
He's playing it again. I wrote Cuomo before he got sick, didn't hear back. But I was thanking him before he got sick. Because Cuomo,
he would have responded to you. Maybe he was someone else was going on. Or maybe it's because you weren't on Full House. You know, his kids just like it.
You know what? Fair enough. You know what? That's a fair enough answer.
You could have been Uncle Jesse. No, you were too young. You were too young.
Chris Cuomo has this thing that I just love in certain people, and it's very, very rare, which is the ability to catch a thought in his butterfly net that we all want to talk about and think about, but weren't quite there enough to articulate or get to. You know, when people can they have a taller, longer reach, and they're able to go, look, here's the thing in all of this to pick out and talk about. And you watch him stretch and pull the cup from the very, very, very top of the cupboard and go, this one. And you go, yes, I'm so sorry I wasn't smart enough to articulate that exact idea, but I'm smart enough to know I want to hear you articulate it. And that's the thing we should be talking about. It's real.
And it's interesting, as he was sick and as he went through it, he got even more clear, because at that point, it's like nothing really matters. What matters is the people you love, is the people you care about, is yourself. You have to love yourself and not think all is lost, which is very hard for a lot of people to do. And he couldn't be with his wife. It's something really, there's certain people that are helping me through this time. And
he's one of those guys for me.
Yeah, me too. Yeah. And I'm not getting, consummate, I haven't been soothed by the people that I've wanted to get soothed by.
And the way he soothes you is by hitting the one pressure point of the day that you wanted to hit, but couldn't quite hit with your radar.
Right.
And he just goes right in on the pressure point And I can't tell you how many times I've watched him and went, thank you. Thank you. That's the point. That's the point.
That's what great communication is. That's what great broadcasting is. But that's what great writing is. When you're watching a movie and at the moment you're thinking about, or a television show, whatever happened to that character, the second they cut to it. And they know where you're at because you're living it with them, the people that wrote this. So he's saying it on the exact moment you're thinking it. And it's not a whining thing. And some people, I'm sure, don't care for him.
Oh, but if you don't follow politics, he's got to annoy. I'm sure he annoys the hell out of you if you don't share his politics. He's got to, right? Because I think if you don't follow the politics, it's going to all come off sanctimonious.
But he's also open to listening. I mean, he is. There is truth to that. And there's truth on the other side. I've watched Fox sometimes. I like to flip around and I get a feeling of, oh, well, that made sense. That was okay.
I do it too. I go to every once in a while, I go to Breitbart.
I want to know what everybody's thinking. I want to know. I want to be part of the world.
Yeah. Every once in a while, just to make sure that you are getting all of, you don't even have to agree with it. You just want to be the person who understands the flight path.
So in closing, this isn't closing. This is just a continuum. What?
Yay. Waiting.
Flaming.
Underneath, what are you talking?
Waiting.
Flaming. Oh, that's right. That's Jerry Lewis singing Waiting.
Waiting.
For the world to change, lady.
Lady.
Oh, how about Jerry Lewis and the Bellboy?
It's pretty great stuff.
When he walks in and everybody tries to light his cigarette. What does he keep yelling? It's where he and his entourage get out of the car in this beautiful shot where 100 people leave the car.
Yeah.
And he says, Jerry Lewis arrives. Okay. You can't play it because you'd have to get the rights to it.
Right.
He walks in. This is the car showing up. Someone tries to light a cigarette. They're covering him. Hold it. He says, hold it. Hold it. Back him. Back. Hold it. Hold it. Hold it. Stop with the brushing, he says. Now we've been together a long time. I've asked you many, many things, and you've come up fat for me. And I'm asking you to hold it. Stop pushing, stop brushing, just hold it. Now we're all adults, and I'll expect you all to conduct yourselves in such a fashion as adult will. Hold it. I've never asked you this, but I'm asking you now simply, purely, hold it! I'm nervous, Rick. You may have a cigarette, and then everybody likes this.
People should watch that movie. There's greatness in what he did.
I thought that joke about hold it.
Yeah.
He says, hold it! With top of the brushing!
There was a movie he did years later, and it shot.
Right. No, this is the joke, Bob. Bob, this is the joke. He goes, give me another cigarette, please. Someone puts a lighter out. He goes, I'll smoke it dry. How funny a joke is that? That's the funniest joke I ever heard in my life, Bob. It's the funniest joke I ever heard in my life. Somebody goes to light it. I'll smoke it dry.
He did a piece of physical business in a movie that was years later, and it was called The Big Mouth, and it wasn't at the heyday of The Bellboy, and which was not far after his split with Dean Martin. And in this movie, The Big Mouth, he's in San Diego. He's got to tip the bell person, and the person has their hand out, and he's got a huge suitcase full of money because he's got this money he shouldn't have. And he starts giving the guy, like, you know, hundreds. And he starts giving the guy money. And the guy keeps his hand out. He stops. And then he starts licking his fingers and starts dealing out more money. But it goes on for about a minute, minute and a half. The guy does not move his hand. He just stares him down like the great Gildersleeve, which nobody knows. But look it up, you know, Jack Benny's foil. It was just one of these guys that was just taking advantage. But it was a snapshot of what we go through of – who do we tip? How much? Where are we going? And that's a thing I'm looking forward to in a world right now where people can go back and doing all that stuff.
Oh, it's so funny. How about the bellboy where they ask him to go set up all the chairs and he has to run across the big empty auditorium and he go the going back and forth between the running and walking and him giving up on walking and giving up on running and giving up on walking.
Right.
It's so funny. So funny. Well, see, Bob, I got to go throw the ball to the dog.
You take care of your dog. I love you, John.
I love you, too. This has been great.
I really enjoyed talking with you, and I'll be talking to you soon. And be well and have fun.
You, too. Stay real safe, and I'll talk to you soon.
I love you.
I love you too.
Bye bye. John Mayer, dear friend, good man. I don't know what to tell you. You heard it. That was a nice long episode. You can, I don't know what to say. Just subscribe. You'll hear more of my friends that are just people that I adore, and I know that many of you do as well. And then people that I get to talk to that I end up adoring that I don't know at all. Or just riffing and seeing what the hell's going on in my little warped mind. So what you want to do is you want to do my little business here. You want to subscribe to this fabulous show. I just love doing it. I love talking to you guys. I know that's hitting some people because I've been getting responses that are really, they mean a lot to me. It means a lot because that means you have to comment. And if it's a negative comment, it does hurt a little bit, but you're not supposed to read them. They say not to read the good ones or the bad ones, but I'm enjoying the good ones. And I'm getting comments on Twitter, and I'm getting them on Instagram and Facebook, and people are saying nice stuff. And if I can be a little bit of a smile in your day with all the billions of things you could be listening to, because there's so many podcasts, I just appreciate it. So you got to review it, and you got to rate it. Give it that, you know, give it that 5-star. Make me a Michelin choice. I don't understand how a place that sells tires is a place that rates your restaurants and hotels. So is it affiliated? Yeah, you don't see the big tire thing. I think it's a separate thing. I'm going to find out about it. All right. Anyway, I'm really happy I got to share that with you, my friendship with this wonderful guy. I'm sending you all the best. I hope you're well. Hope you're staying safe. No matter where we're at in this thing, no matter where you are, where things are a little bit easier or things are tougher, thinking about you, thinking about everybody, thinking about the world. So I'm going to sing that right now. We Are the World. No, I can't do that. Somebody must get royalties. Or if you sing that song, do the royalties go to like the Human Rights Foundation or something? Does it go to the Humane Society? I don't know. Maybe it goes to just maybe helping small businesses get back or something. Anyway, lots of sending out love and sending out positivity. And tell your friends about this thing because you got friends. You're talking to them on Zoom and FaceTime and text them. Because I'm going to be doing this a long time because I love it. And I care about you guys. I'm sorry, but it's true. So this has been me. First podcast ever done by a comedian ever. Bob Saget is here for you. You guys take care.
Unexpected trouble? CashNet USA can take the stress out of borrowing emergency funds. Our fast, secure application process makes it easy to apply online 24/7. Plus, CashNet USA offers same-day funding if approved before 10:30 a.m. Central Time, Monday through Friday. Additional terms may apply. Visit CashNetUSA.com or tap the banner to apply today.